Latin Radio.
And as I mentioned earlier, joining me right now is Scott Tatter. We've spoken to him many an occasion here, and he's very enlightening when he looks at the body language of people and works out what exactly they are saying. He's also managing director of Presidium Risk and Resilience. Hello, Scott. Good to speak to you.
Hi, Jenny. How are you going?
Good. Everyone's absolutely enthralled, not to the point of being happy about it, but so surprised and so shocked about the, I guess, the, you know, the charges against Aaron Patterson has had world coverage, hasn't it?
Yeah, it has, and now obviously being charged with, you know, three counts of murder and five of attempted murder. So, yeah, definitely.
Okay. Now, we know that that's the case, and it's going to take a couple more months, I do believe, for them to go through. Isn't it interesting they've got a dog that's trained now that can sniff out technology going through computer?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, the canines and some of the skills they transfer is incredible, whether it's cadavers or technology. Yeah, it's amazing.
Well, the animals have to keep up with technology as well, don't they?
Yes, that's right.
As well as us. Now, your perspective on her non-verbal behaviour when she was first interviewed.
Yeah, I think there's quite a number of indicators in there, and obviously when we look at these sort of things, there's no one true indicator of deception, but there's a range of different clusters, and I think if you look at some of the words utilised and some of the non-verbals there's definitely some things, some flags, I would say. From the initial conversations, there was lots of closing of her eyelids, of eyes for longest period, which is what we call eye-blocking behaviour as well. So there were some early indicators of that, but a whole range of others.
Yeah, I mean, when we think back to her first interview when she just gets out of the car to go into her home, you're absolutely right. But I guess, you know, we're not educated to look for these sort of things that you do. And she seemed so out of place. She didn't know where to look. And we had a bit of sympathy for her, I think, at that time. But the eye-blocking behaviour, is that sort of blocking out the truth? Is that what it implies?
Well, eye-blocking behaviour can be, so if we're either trying to, yeah, remove ourselves from a situation, eye-blocking can occur, and there's different versions of that. One can be the hand over the eyes, like it that occurs, or even how we adjust, how long we're blinking for as well. Yeah. But some of the others, I mean, there was lots of situations during those interviews where you could see she was repeatedly checking for tears and then having to check her hands to see if there was tears there. So there was lots of indicators with the eyes, including the blink rate. When asked specifically about where did you get the mushrooms and things, you could see that her blink rate spiked quite heavily as well.
Yeah, when you think about the blink rate, I guess that's sort of a reaction to the surprise for the question and, goodness me, I'm getting checked out here. So it's a physical thing that manifests itself, does it, for what the brain is thinking at the time?
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, the average blink rate, and we're saying average here, is between 10 to 14 blinks per minute. Now, if people are under stress or duress, that can be through cognitive load for deception or a range of other things. It can cause the blink rate to spike, as we saw there. By the opposite, if people are very interested and liking what they see, your blink rate can drop to 6 or 8. So that's why when I'm doing a presentation, I can tell who's interested.
If they're looking at you and staring at you, you've got them all. That is really interesting. Yeah. And, you know, like we've said before, you know, you can apply these sort of bits of information you share with us, Scott, to people that you're interviewing, watching on television, you know, that you deal with on a daily basis and work things out a little bit more. But, you know, with the hands over the face that you mentioned earlier, that can happen to people when they're in a distressed state or they're frightened or somebody, you know, has been in an accident or something and the relative is watching. They cover their eyes, don't they? They don't want to face reality.
That's right. I mean, there's multiple things that occur, even when we drop our chin and cover our vulnerable areas around with their neck. But there's so many other indicators in the face, and one of the others, for example, somebody who, if they're going through deep sadness, like with what's occurring, then we get the activation of what we call the grief muscle, which is the corrugator supercilii, and you see the inner elements of the eyebrow will turn up, and there'll be some tension in the forehead. So you can see people with true sadness, you see that, and during some of the review of some of the interviews there, that was not activated, which is potentially another flag.
Yeah, she seemed to have a fairly blank look on her face. And let's go back to the, was she crying or not? You say she looked at her palms to see if there were tears there. So she seems to me that if what you're saying with this body language, that she was quite controlled about what she was doing.
that was a really great choice of phrasing there, because if you think, if somebody's truly devastated about a situation, think the last time you've heard a child cry and deeply cry, you get that breathless and random sort of like breathing as well, but you didn't see that. It didn't really affect her breathing during that time.
Yeah.
And the other part was about the words when she was asked specific questions. Can you tell us about the meal? Rather than responding at all, her response was, I'm so devastated about what happened. So the word selection, I think, is very, very important as well, because there was some random statements during those brief snippet of interviews, such as, they never did anything wrong to me.
Yeah.
That's additional information that why come through with that defensive type statement?
Yes, you're right. You know, if you're caught in a horrible situation, you tend to break down very quickly. There's no two ways about it. She shakes her head no slightly. Is that right, when she said she was devastated that she loved them?
Yeah, so the thing is, what we look for is congruence. So people's, you know, the words and their body language, like, it should be congruent with the message that they're trying to put forward. And so there was a time during one of the interviews where it's quite clear that she's speaking about the people involved and said, look, they're some of the best people I've ever met. But she's shaking her head no when she says this, which it just shows a lack of congruence.
They never did anything wrong to me was an answer she gave too, when it was pointed out what had happened, of course, and she might have been, the one that was giving the meal and knowingly was giving them poisoned mushrooms. That's pretty, this is a movie stuff, isn't it?
It is, because even some of the other phrasing in there, if you think, one of the other statements that she had said was, they said, can you tell us about the lunch? And her response was, what I can tell you is, and then she mentioned just about how she's feeling. Now, when people say that, it's the same as saying, I'm trying to be as honest as possible here. With these sort of limiting type statements, saying like, what I can tell you, or I'm trying to be as honest as possible, well, that's indicating then if there's other items that I can't tell you, there's things I can't tell you.
Yeah.
So what are those things? So that's why it questions, further investigation.
Well, apart from yourself explaining everything that you saw, the nonverbal language, I mean, the thing is that she was very well versed, like I said earlier, it seems. She was very prepared, wasn't she?
Yeah, so she was. I'd say a lot of the responses there seem quite rehearsed, and that's why you saw the cadence. We look when somebody's speaking as well, when we're checking that congruence and you're looking for that integrity. We look for their rhythm, speed, volume, and pitch. And you saw early on she was quite rhythmic. Her cadence, like it was, quite stable until she was pressed right at the end, and that's when you saw a change in the spike. But up until that, a couple of those answers seemed quite rehearsed.
Well, she is under arrest now, so it'll be going to court in, next year, perhaps?
May, I believe it's May that the hearing is going to occur. So.
Okay, that's interesting. And, of course, the other charges, the 3 of 5 attempted murder charges back in 2021, 2022, that doesn't look good, does it?
No, and that was with her ex-partner. I mean, there was, from what I'm led to believe, quite a bit of content that he hadn't shared on social media, and family came to see him just because, and to say farewell because of how bad things were. So you can imagine there was just such a depth of investigation. I mean, it's incredible work by the police what they've had to do for this time with the amount of forensic investigation they've had to do for this case.
They have, haven't they? They haven't left a stone unturned. Apparently she mixed up who had passed and who was in hospital. I don't know how long after the fact that these people had passed away, whether she was interviewed then or when they had just been taken to hospital, but she didn't seem to know that or didn't let it be known.
So a couple of things with that. When people are under deep stress, and that can be from deep sadness, but also cognitive load and things with deception as well, that's when our brains can focus on different elements. And so initially she had said that it was, believe it was Ian that she said had passed. And then afterwards, but it's not just about the words chosen there.
Yeah.
The sentences as well is we look for how pronouns, but also the tense that people use. And one of the earlier statements she had said was Ian and Heather were some of the best people ever met. Well, Ian was still alive at that time.
Ah, yes.
And so when we drop in a past tense, I think there was another murder Lindsay guy where, the person who ended up committing that murder said, Lindsay was a great, was a great mum, and this was shortly after she was missing. So the words sometimes under stress and duress, can be released and or leaked, and that can give some true indication.
You mentioned here that she was happy to speak right up until asked where the mushrooms came from. She was quite adamant about that, wasn't she?
Yeah, it seemed to be a turning point. So when pressed about that, and then you could see that there was a change in tone, change in cadence as well. And even if you're really particular with watching that, even a change for with her steps when she gets quite heavily embolstered, like if with her steps. Mm. So a range of items. And that's why we just look for the changes in deviation through the communication, so the non-verbals, the word selection and ordering, all these sort of things. So we're really trying to look at the totality of a picture to glean true intent.
Scott, with your knowledge of body language and very, you know, it's very obvious that you know exactly what it's about. What about the police department themselves? Do they have people that study body language, and when their person's being interviewed, they do watch for these signs?
They have definitely an element like of training with that, and they work with other specialists as well, getting some feedback and specifics on these. And a lot of these, as I said, are indicators. There's so many depths of field here, because you're talking facial micro-expressions, body language, statement and word analysis, including selection, ordering, and all those items. And on top of that, they've got all the forensic information and things they need to go through as well. So, I mean, they have had to do so much for this. And whilst I haven't obviously spoken to them and discussed my thoughts, and like it seems they would definitely have specialists that will be looking at similar things as well, even just to look for where they should further dig.
Yeah, look, it is amazing. I think we should all be a little bit, but sort of, you know, knowing a little bit more about body language for our day-to-day work ethics and all that sort of thing, so we can watch out for red flags as well.
Yeah, whether it's recruitment or just interpersonal relationships, or if it's out of interest looking for deception for some of these things like we do on the news, just being more aware and being better connected and more present to the people we're interacting with is very powerful.
Especially people that are going out dating. They, I think there's a market there for them to know what to look out for if there's a prospective partner coming on the scene.
Well, it's even before they meet. Yes, I mean, so from that point of view, if you look at even with the ordering of words that people put in their profiles, so you can see if people have a range of things, this is who I am and what I'm about, people put the most important things first. So, yeah, there's lots of indicators there. That's probably a whole nother segment for you.
I agree, Scott. You know, we've had this horrific situation of murders as a result of domestic violence, and, you know, where everyone's sort of shaking their head. What do you do? How do we see the signs early on? And, you know, it's been suggested, and I think it's, well, I sort of thought of it as well, of when children, when young people get to teenage times, they're about to go out in their big wide world and meet dates and everything like that, they should be perhaps educated to look out for signs, both men and women, young boys and young girls.
I completely agree. And look, there's some organisations that do this incredibly well, and across in different states or, you know, throughout the country. There's some work where Betty Miller does with a program which with Walk the Talk, and she talks about respectful relationships, and it's with teenagers that are having impact with schools, and they talk about healthy relationships and consent and communication, and it's just so powerful and timely for that to occur.
Oh, we have to have something happen very, very quickly. We had another murder here just last week at the Crown Casino. She was a lawyer, young woman, so it just never stops. It's very frightening. Scott, thank you as always. We really appreciate your information.
Thanks very much, Jenny.
Great. It's a pleasure. You. Thank you. Scott Taylor there. He's Managing Director of Presidium Risk and Resilience.